Welcome to the Care Deeply podcast. I'm your host, Yolan Morris. Today, we're continuing our conversation on Black lives with a focus on Black entrepreneurs. Meet Shone Chikonbi, born in Nigeria but raised in Brooklyn, the granddaughter of a Nigerian diplomat. She's an out-of-the-box thinker and writer and Pan-Africanist who is working toward a deeper, intimate connection within the diaspora community by creating a unified spiritual and economic movement to help Africans fully realize wealth and potential. She founded Karfi, a consulting and leadership development firm tackling the issue of untapped talent in Africa by empowering any and all, regardless of wealth, status, or geography, with the resources and tools needed to lead and succeed. Shone is also embarking on a new journey in this season. In this episode, we discuss her new venture, Naturally Beat, and the connection between good self-care and good skincare. Hi, Shone. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Care Deeply podcast. I'm so excited to just introduce you to our listeners and just have you tell your story and your journey as an entrepreneur. So can you just, first off, tell us, before I give anything away, tell us who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this, how I should introduce myself, and I wanted to be a little bit more intentional rather than just, you know, listing off my biography, right? Because we're also, just want to acknowledge the significance of the moment that we're in right now. Yeah. And so I'm kind of like using that as my centering point. But this is also just true in general of me. I feel like oftentimes this is how I introduce myself. So if I were to sum it up, I would say I am a African woman, African descent, and I'm like a super passionate Pan-Africanist. And I'm also, of course, a believer, right? And those three things really have dictated a lot of my choices and decisions in life, and also I think play a huge role in how I see God's purpose for my life. And I can go into it a little bit in terms of just like growing up, and I just realized this when I was a lot older, but growing up, my parents and parts of my family, my extended family, were very intentional about making me very like, or pushing me to be very proud of my African heritage. Yeah. And that was tough growing up as the first generation kid in a predominantly African-American community. I grew up in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. And, you know, just having, it was around the time, you know, it was the 80s and the 90s, around the time where anything that was considered African was considered backwards. And you can argue that people still feel that way, but it was really like heavy in terms of like teasing as a young kid. And I remember intentionally telling people that I had an American name rather than giving them my real name, because that's how bad it was. You know, that's how afraid I was to live my truth. And I actually got in trouble by my parents when they found out I was telling people I had a different name other than the one that they gave me, which is very, very African. And, you know, outside of that, like, they just always gave me books to read, things to watch, and always just like, you know, had conversations with me that centered around, you know, being proud of my heritage and understanding why I should be proud of it, and learning about my history and how that applies to like the way that I navigate through life. And so that's why I always introduce myself that way, because it plays a huge role in like how I interact with the African-American community now, as we talk about, you know, things that still need to be addressed in those areas in terms of racial injustice. Mm-hmm. It also dictates my work that I do, or the passion that I have about building up self, you know, empowering Africans to build self determination, right? So like to be in charge of their development, to be in charge of their growth, rather than always extending out their hand and help to like the Western world or anyone else. And then I always, you know, as I grew older, I had to figure out, how do I center that around like my Christian faith? You know, is this godly? And what does, you know, being a Pan-Africanists mean for my, you know, my faith? You know, is there room there for me to be very like pro-Black and be very much about, you know, making sure that these people feel empowered politically, not just, you know, socially and economically. And, you know, am I being a good Christian while doing that also? And I know a lot of people are having questions about that around this time, but I would definitely say that, yes, it is possible. And it's just my driving force in everything I do.
I love that. I love that you told your story, right? And again, the purpose of why you're so passionate about what you do. I think it was an interesting point, as you said, that growing up, because I also grew up in Brooklyn, and being Caribbean, being Jamaican, you know, it was, there were definitely these kind of, you know, in a very immigrant community, they were kind of the outcast immigrants, right? And there were certain things that were said about certain types of people, like Africans and others, that, you know, it was almost like a disassociation, right? And just it, even in now, last week I spoke to Pastor Gabby Cujo Wilkes, and she talked about, first of all, with the Black community, that we're not a monolith.
Right.
We're not a monolith. We are comprised of so many different ethnic cultures and heritages and nations.
Right.
It's so important to remember that, because it can't be a one size fits all approach to everyone in the Black community. So, you know, with that being said, can you just tell us about kind of your goals for building up and empowering entrepreneurs from the African diaspora or from the African continent?
Yeah. I fell into being an entrepreneur by accident, funny enough. But now I'm like, I think that that's the biggest tool that we have to self-empowerment, and also freeing ourselves from a lot of these metaphorical chains that still exist even after slavery. And even, you know, in Africa, freeing ourselves from colonialist, you know, mentality and strongholds. So I would not say that naturally I would ever gravitate towards being an entrepreneur. But a lot of people were encouraging me and saying, you know, the way that you talk about Africa, the way that the ideas that you come up with about how financially and economically we could, you know, do a lot of this work for ourselves, again, rather than relying on charity, because I've had this whole debate academically and just internally about how beneficial charity work is really to the African diaspora as a whole, but definitely towards Africa. And, you know, because of that encouragement, that's the reason why I took the risk and went and did it. So about 2.5 years ago, I decided to create a firm called Carfi, which now evolved into more of an NGO or a foundation, where I facilitate these conversations about what does it mean for Africans to be in charge of their destiny. And, you know, this was already happening. So I was really just capitalizing on what was happening and starting and just pushing, you know, trying to fuel the fire. And so in Africa, we have a very, very young population. We are on track to having the biggest population, also the youngest population, which will exceed China, who is currently in the lead, right? And that's the whole continent. That's just not one country. So, you know, there's a lot of power there in terms of like the youth being very energized and being, you know, young people, you know, want to be creative, and they want to, you know, not just follow what their elders did. You know, they're full of energy and creativity and innovation, but they just don't know how to channel it a lot of times. And they also don't always have the resources to do it. So it's not a matter of Africans can't be developed, right? Like there's just, when I was in Kenya about 3 months ago now, I think it was, I didn't see a lack of any entrepreneurs at all. If anything, they were going a lot further than me with a lot less. But I saw that they could do a lot more if they had people externally come in and help them. And the funny thing is that even though the people who were currently there externally coming were saying that they were going to help them, they weren't going that far. And I think it has to do with this, again, idea of charity work versus economic empowerment. So the goal of Carfi basically is to say, okay, there's Africans in the diaspora who are doing really well. They went to school at the top universities. They work for the best organizations, whether it be the UN, whether it be JP Morgan, et cetera. And they have all of this, you know, brain power. that they're taking outside of the continent, why don't they start bringing it back to the continent? And how can I help them basically facilitate that conversation and not be nervous about the risks that are involved? You know, people still have this notion that if I send money to Africa to do business, it's going to disappear and I'll never see it again. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I will be that bridge for you. I will be the one that will help you do this in a smart, strategic way. And it started off really well. Like, I had amazing clients. One of my clients was this young man from Ghana who was recognized by President Obama. He got one of the Presidential Achievement Awards from President Obama for his work with his organization. And he's still a client with me today. I won a grant to actually go and lead my own workshop in a place called Kibera, which is, if I'm not mistaken, the largest and the poorest urban slum in Africa. And it's the second largest, I'm sorry, in Africa. And it's also the second largest in the world after the one in Mumbai, India. And, you know, I had the opportunity to have over 50 young people come and participate in that as well. So the opportunities are there. And my goal is just to somehow find a way to continue to keep this work going in a post-COVID world. Right now, we're in a pandemic that's preventing me from actually being there on the ground. But thank God I was able to share my contact details with all the participants who were there. So they still text me and I'm still giving them words of encouragement that way. But I know, like, when that face-to-face communication is not there, and, you know, when there's something like a global pandemic that's affecting an already fragile financial state on the continent, the work is even more pressing and urgent, but it can be challenging at times.
That's amazing. And when you say Africa, right, we recognize that it is a continent. Which countries do you find yourself mostly concentrating in? Mm-hmm. Where are your entrepreneurs mostly from?
So just by virtue of the fact that I have a Nigerian passport, I do have a lot of people that I work with from Nigeria. I won this grant opportunity back in October to do the pilot program in Kenya. So that's what brought me to East Africa as well. But I wouldn't want to narrow my work just to East or West Africa. I would love to. I had an opportunity to go visit South Africa, and I know that they're a lot further in many ways than most other countries, but there's still a lot of work to be done there, especially in Johannesburg. So in the major markets, which were the three that I just mentioned, actually Nigeria, Kenya, and South Africa, there's so much work to be done, and I would love to continue to expand that work. But frankly, it needs to be happening across the board, because a lot of people forget about Central Africa, where there's, and it's not that they forget about it, it's just that it's such a bigger issue. There's like a real bad stronghold there in terms of genocide and like civil wars that are still going on, that people just feel like it's not in a stable enough state for us to go there and help. But again, like, that's where my Christian side comes in also, and my radical Pan-African side too, almost, because I'm like, listen, if we have to be one Africa, it can't just be this one country is seceding, that one country is seceding. I'm like, well, sorry, that one can't get its act together. Let's just leave it alone. And I think that's also a Christian calling as well, that you're supposed to go throughout the whole world, not just the places that seem safe or someone has already done the legwork for you. You know, we have to take that risk as Christians as well. So I'm hoping to see the entire continent come together at some point.
I think that is, you know, for the entire continent to come together is definitely the goal. The goal is unity, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I spent 6 months in Rwanda a couple of years ago, and I mentioned this on one of our earlier episodes when I was talking to Linda Smith, who is a missionary in Rwanda. And one of the things that I really loved seeing in my time in Rwanda, because it was my first time living on the continent of Africa, living in East Africa, and visiting Kenya and Uganda, and seeing a lot of it, just opened my eyes to things that I didn't realize were happening. And specifically, it was this entrepreneurship. There are so many entrepreneurs, so many tech entrepreneurs in East Africa, from what I saw. And, you know, one of them, a friend of mine, who's also a Christian, one thing she said to me that really stood out, and even to this day, she's like, you know, in America, you guys have so many options. So often you're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know. You know, we're kind of like, it's like that analysis paralysis, right? It's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. So we do nothing, right? We procrastinate. Versus she's like, here, we don't have a choice. It's almost like this urgency, right? That happens like this is what we have to do. It's almost like a survival. And so what do you think, or what have you seen from working with African leaders and African entrepreneurs? What are some lessons that we can bring back, even that American entrepreneurs can learn?
So yeah, you brought up the whole thing about us having options, and in a way that's been used in, it's been used as a way to kind of, I don't know if the right word is pathologize Africans. I don't know if that's the best word to use, but it's definitely kept I think it's kept us in a box across the African diaspora, right? So I'll start with just like a kind of like funny and more a story more related to me. Growing up, you know, as a Nigerian, you're told that you have to have three careers max, either a doctor, lawyer, or engineer, right? You can't be anything outside of those three things because A, it's not going to give you enough money to survive and, you know, take care of your family, blah, blah, blah. And then two, it's just not prestigious to do anything else, right? Like the other things are not a job, those are hobbies, right? And it's funny that you would think that coming here, you know, once our family brings us here and, you know, technically speaking, we have a slew of options, you know, available to us, that our parents would encourage us to take more risk and say, okay, no, you can go into that more creative career, or you can go into, you know, the fashion business, or as in my case, now I'm going into the beauty business, which I'll go into later. But a lot of things in the African diaspora, we don't explore and go beyond that because of this survival mode that we're constantly in. Like we have to do something that's going to guarantee us wealth throughout generations. We can't say, oh, like I'm dreaming of being a writer because we can't afford that. Like that's not going to feed us in the immediate term. So I guess to answer your question, what I'm saying is that I think part of my goal, right, going to Africa and talking about this entrepreneurship work is that I also didn't want to be doing like perpetuating the status quo of like, yeah, just go into tech or just do this, because the thing about it is not just are you also taking people away from being able to aspire and dream, which I think is a luxury that we only afford to people, that we think we can only afford to people in the more developed world or in the more affluent, like kind of spaces. And I think that's where the pathology comes in, where it's like, oh, you know, you just need to do this because you need to survive. But like I, you know, get to like dream and do much more. So on the one hand, it's like, I think that's wrong. I think that's a form of just limiting people unnecessarily because you put them in a state where they are forced to have to think about survival all the time. But also too, is like, it's not good for diversification, right? So when I went to Kenya is like the tech hub of Africa because they invented this thing called mobile money. You just have a lot of people in Nairobi who are doing tech startups. And it's like, if you're not a tech startup, it's like, don't even talk to anybody at any of the startup hubs or any kind of venture capitalists, right? Because they don't want to hear it. But then you get a overbloated industry. Like there's just so many people trying to do the same exact thing. No one's thinking of anything creative. Nobody's doing anything innovative. And ironically, that takes away from one of our natural gifts that I said I saw when I actually went to Kenya, or when I went to, you know, Africa in general, is that we're so like, we have ingenuity. We have so many great ideas for different things that we can create. Even if you just look at our art scene, right? Afrobeats now is everywhere. Something that we were listening to for the past 20-30 years is suddenly like our biggest export now, technically speaking. And if I told my mother 15 years ago that I wanted to be a DJ, she would have like slapped me. Like, what are you talking about? And now I see my friends who were playing, you know, doing those DJ sets in the basement, who are now making millions of dollars, like touring the world or whatever. So we need to come together as an African diaspora and say, listen, it's not that these industries are not worthwhile, or it's not that these things like the arts or, you know, creative industries are something we should look down upon. But these are things that if we really think creatively and take that, you know, naturally inclined ingenuity that we have as a people, we can turn it into gold, and we can actually, you know, and that will be actually greater for, you know, ourselves, for our self-fulfillment. And I'm going to talk about more of this later on in terms of just like my journey in terms of finding my real purpose in life. So it'll be self-fulfillment, but it'll also, again, just be, realistically speaking, great for our economy and for our culture as a whole.
Yeah, I think that you, what you said, that that definitely is something that now I, you know, I think it's not just the being African, I think being immigrant, being Black people, you know, Jamaican, they're saying you should, you know, you should only do these careers, and wanting me even wanting to be an artist or being more like a communicator. But if you, it's similarly, if I told my mom, 10 years ago, right? Much less 15 years ago, I want to be a content creator or influencer. Those things didn't exist. But with new technology comes new roles and new, new streams of income, right? That we couldn't even have dreamed of.
Exactly. And it's just a matter of, again, the thing that's missing in all of this is just teaching our young people how to channel that energy in the right way. So yes, you want to be a content creator. Great. What's your business plan? How are you going to scale this? Do you know the insides and outs of this industry and how people actually monetize their content? You know, how do you build your, you know, your own brand as, you know, a person? All of these questions, are things that, you know, can easily be discussed and be addressed if we just take the time and take it seriously. But the thing is that we immediately label it as something that's, you know, no, that's not actually important, or that's not a real thing, that's not a real job. And so we miss an opportunity.
You know, do you find that the work that you're doing in terms of building up entrepreneurs is affected in any way by missionaries or people who come to distribute charitable goods, or just are really their goal is charity and not entrepreneurship?
That is a great question. Yes and no. I'm not going to, you know, paint a broad brush and say that everyone is like this. For example, Brooklyn Tabernacle, I think does a really good job with Pastor Jerry Pack. Is it Pack or Park? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm messing up. But he does a really great job with his business as a ministry, right? With saying, okay, we have to really set expectations on, like, first of all, what can realistically happen if we're saying we're going to, you know, help people build, you know, their personal wealth and, you know, build an economy in an underdeveloped country. But, you know, also thinking about it biblically too. But like, yeah, he doesn't just go there and say, oh, we're just going to train you on how to do something, or we're just going to give you a skill and then leave. Like, he really takes his time to think about how does this turn into something that scales, you know, after we leave, and how does it sustain after we leave. But unfortunately, and this is a thing that's well documented, it's called the charitable industrial complex. Most people get a, for lack of a better term, they get a kick out of people being in a place of supplication, right? Which is definitely not biblical. You should never feel like people need to stay subjugated so that you can continue to feel above and more powerful than them. But that's what the charitable industrial complex is. And I think the church has to have a frank conversation about if that's what they're perpetuating. Are you just feeling like you need to, especially Western churches, of course, are you in a position where you feel that people need to stay in a place where they can't, you know, go beyond this. Like, they have to stay in this perpetual state of needing help so that you continue to have a purpose, so that you continue to have something that they need from you. And then you find your calling, or you find fulfillment in someone else's lack thereof. And that makes me so, that makes me so upset. And it's caused a lot of, I want to say caused like, chaos or drama in my life when it comes to like the church, but it's something that I always have in the back of my mind and has been that source of tension for me a lot of times with, again, like my very quote unquote radical views. When I read, you know, read people like, you know, sorry, what's his name? Oh my goodness, James Baldwin, or Marcus Garvey, who had these, you know, conversations about, you know, the connection between African-Americans in Africa and how we build generational wealth. And then also when I go back to the Bible, I'm like, I've been going through it and trying to find scripture that says like, this is actually, you know, biblically based. And there's a lot of scripture and of that in Proverbs. And I think we also just see it play out in certain communities, like with the Jewish community and with the Muslim community. And I just wish that the Christian community would realize that, that's actually the same direction that we should go, and how much more powerful can we be when we have the Holy Spirit, the one that we know is like the true living God behind us in doing that work.
Wow. Yeah. I think that you said it in a way that I've never heard it said before. And this is exactly why I wanted you on this podcast, on this episode, because just your approach to business and entrepreneurship, just your knack for it, right? I would say that it is your calling, it is your purpose. And I am so excited to see you doing it. I'm so excited to see all the opportunities that God is bringing your way and the clients and everything. But I'm also excited about your latest venture. Can you tell us about this?
This is the part that I was waiting for. So I'll start with some context, right? Because I know people really know me for Carfi and they really know me for my work in Africa. And so they're going to say, wow, this is a left turn for sure. So like I said, we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? And I don't know if anyone has taken advantage of this. I think it's a intentional opportunity that God was like, let's press the reset button and everybody take a seat and think about your life for a second. In more ways than one. But for me, it was more about, okay, I'm seeing, and I hate to be morbid, but I was like, I'm seeing, you know, these thousands of deaths day by day, across the country in the US, but especially in the epicenter where I live, which is New York. And I'm like, wow, if I were to die today, would I be happy? And my answer was kinda. And I was like, kinda. That's not good enough. I mean, I was actually thinking about this too. Like, 2020 has been a crazy year. So like, believe it or not, like we thought that this was the worst that it was going to get when Kobe Bryant died. And then, you know, people were talking about, you know, all the things that he did with his career outside of basketball. And I was like, again, like if I were to, you know, God forbid, get on a plane, taking it for granted and didn't come back, would I say that I died happy? And again, the answer was kinda. And so I had to sit and, you know, that's why I actually wrote something today in my journal because I was really trying to set my intentions today about what I was going to share. And, you know, because
I love it.
Absolutely. That's a new term that I learned also in quarantine.
I've seen that so many times. Set your intentions, this whole thing about manifestation. So tell us more about it.
Yeah. So what I think what I'll do is I'll read the journal entry because it's kind of giving the context, and then I'll go into like what my new venture is, right? So I wrote this after I read Ecclesiastes 2:26. And then I went down another rabbit hole and I started reading Psalm 44 and Revelation. And this is what I felt like God was speaking to me. So my prompt basically was, what kind of person do you want to become? And I wrote, I want to be free. That's the biggest revelation I've had since quarantine began this year. I felt that society, or maybe just the people in my circle, believe that once you say you're this or you're that, you just have to be that. And perhaps even more so, as a woman, you're not allowed to explore different sides of yourself, or else someone will call you confused. But I'm not. I have multiple interests. I'm multifaceted. People throw that word around a lot, so let me define it. A facet is any definable aspect that makes up a larger object, that makes it whole. I don't just have one facet. None of us do. But we allow others, for example, men, in this case I used, to say, oh, I'm this, I'm that, and I'm the third, right? Bill Gates was never studied medicine a day in his life, didn't even finish college at that. And he runs a multi-billion-dollar tech company and a foundation where he gives lectures on education policy and pandemics. And no one stops to say, hey, you're doing a lot right now. But as a Black woman, I hear people say, didn't you just start doing this? Why are you trying to do something else now? So the one thing I wish to become is someone unafraid to explore all my options, all my interests, and not think twice about how others feel about it. I want to be free. And so I say all of this to say that's a culmination of the past, 3 months now that we've been in quarantine and really reflecting on, I was stuck here in New York City because I came to visit from Kenya and couldn't do a lot of the work that I was doing with Carfi. And had to ask myself, let's just take an inventory of what you have accomplished with it. How are you feeling? And as a Black woman entrepreneur, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that deals with this, the biggest struggle that I've had as this person, this Black woman entrepreneur, is convincing people of my worth, convincing people that I'm someone they should invest time or even actual financial resources into. And I thought about the work that I did in Kenya and how I was really lucky to have that grant awarded to me. But I was still doing a lot of the work by myself because even with money, you would think, I have money now. I can convince people to do some things. I can, kind of use that as leverage. But a lot of times people are still doubting my ability. And I was also starting to think about, in this situation where a lot of my speaking engagements were canceled. So I get also a lot of my income comes from going around and speaking, but everything was canceled from the pandemic. I couldn't travel. And I was like, goodness gracious, how do I continue to fund this and, keep the momentum going when I can't travel and I can't, and, a lot of people dragging their feet who made promises to invest in this project, but haven't done so. So I'm not saying that I'm giving up totally on Carfi, right? But it's just like a fact of the matter. And one of the things I love, I was listening to Pastor Mike Todd, shout out to Transformation Church. And he has this, hot acronym that he has was honest, open, and transparent. And I was like, I had to be hot with myself. I was like, listen, as much as I love and I'm passionate about uplifting other Africans, I'm doing a lot for others right now. Like my whole life, and I know that this is right what's going on right now in terms of Black women being on the front lines protesting, So talking about self-care right now, I was like, I'm doing a lot for others and I'm stressing myself out trying to find the resources to help them, and I'm not taking time to help myself. Ooh. So if I'm still answering kinda to my happiness, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I'm pouring into others and not myself. So what can I do to pour into myself? And, I love being an entrepreneur. I love being creative. I think that that's been a gift that God, that's a gift that God said was my purpose, is to just be, to create, like whatever it might be. I love writing. I one time was playing the piano and wanted to create music. So I'm just a creator. And I was like, what can I create in this time that I'm in? And, again, thinking about self-care, thinking about taking care of myself, I was actually just annoyed one day. I was like, oh my gosh, my face looks crazy and I'm on all these video calls, conference calls. So what am I going to do about this? And the long story short, the mask that I was using at the time that I usually use for my at-home facials was just tearing up my skin. I was like, what is going on? Like, I am breaking out all over the place. My skin is dry, way drier than it needs to be, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, wait a minute. What if I created my own solution to this? Because this is my form of self-care. When I take off my makeup, when I unwind from the day and, put on the mask, I feel like I am taking care of myself. That is a form of self-care for me. But then I'm like, I can also add the other part of self-care for me, which is to be creative, to create. And so I was just mixing different things, experimenting, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, whoa, this actually works really well for me. I'm not someone, even though I have pretty decent skin outside of the oiliness, I'm not someone who can use a product over and over again without getting irritation. But this one I was using for 4 days, 7 days, and it was actually doing amazing work to my skin. So I was like, oh, what's going on here? So I was like, let me reach out to some people, have them try it out and see what they say. And it's like, without me having to prompt people, people started buying it from me. And I was like, this is interesting. This is very interesting. I would have never thought that I would be someone who would go into like the beauty skincare space, right? And it was, again, just like most things in my life, even with the car fee work, I fell into it by accident. But as I was, again, reflecting today on what I wanted to talk about and why I went into this space, I felt God saying, you know, I'm creating you to be free. Like, I didn't make a mistake with you being this person who, you know, has, you know, amazing ideas and wants to, you know, tackle them and like, you know, play them out and see how it goes. And, you know, this is probably the fastest I've ever had traction for a new business or initiative that I've started, because I literally started it in quarantine and I already have sales, already have amazing reviews from people. And so, yeah, I started this new skincare product, which is called Naturally Beat. And through my studying and experimenting, I learned, you know, more about like how beets have natural antioxidant properties, a really great, obviously for you to ingest, but it's also really great for applying to your skin. And so obviously there's more ingredients to it. And I, you know, just mixed it in with the beet powder that is my base for my product. And literally, you know, within 4 or 7 days, my pores were smaller. The oil was under control. I even felt like more comfortable going on video calls without makeup on, which is very, very rare for me. And I think that's also another form of radical self-care, just to bring it all back and tie a thread through all of this. Because I almost feel like maybe this was prophetic, because for me, and I know probably this is true for a lot of women, that we feel like we have to always put on a face or put on like, you know, a show for people. I was reading about this thing called the Superwoman Schema, which says that we perform strength, we perform, we go above and beyond to be performative in our strength as Black women, because it's a form of protection for us. And it's also, we feel like that's the only way that people will take us seriously, right? So we put aside our ability to really tap into our vulnerability. We don't want to tap into our emotions too much. You know, God forbid people call us hysterical. And it actually literally causes harm to us. Physically, internally, like to our heart, right? Stress and all this kind of other things that happen internally, but also to our face, ironically, because, you know, I'm like, okay, why am I overproducing oil in my skin? Like, why is my skin so oily even at this age? And it's stress. Stress and cortisol literally creates oiliness on your skin and it causes breakouts and stuff like that. So I just feel like it came full circle for me. It was like, okay, I was talking about, or I was reflecting on how can I be free? How can I, you know, how can I find a radical form of self-care for myself? And how can I do something that, that I know is just for me? Like, basically this brand is really, you know, it's for other people. Like I'm hoping that, and I've already seen that it actually helps people who are going through the same thing I've been going through with my skin, but it's also literally a form of self-care for myself, because this is not about, and I don't mean to be selfish, but it's like, it's not about helping people. And I felt like my whole life has been defined by, you know, how much I am pouring into others. Like I said before, how much I'm helping people. But this time, this is something just for me. And so, like, I think it's important as anyone going into business, especially female entrepreneurs, that, again, the men are already doing it. The men have so many things in their portfolio. They're like, oh, yeah, I have part ownership in this business. And also I do that on the side. Why can't we do the same thing? While also, you know, we can still have that part of us that says, you know, we're also, you know, doing charitable work and we also have causes that we care about. But there's nothing to feel guilty about when you're saying, I want to venture out to different things. Like, that's literally the definition of an entrepreneur. So I just feel like this whole new skincare line that I created was definitely prophetic and was a way for me to answer that question. You know, if I were to die today, would I be happy? And literally right now, because of especially all the traction that I'm getting so quickly from doing this, I could definitely say, like, you know, even no matter where the skin line product goes, like, at least I'm happier that I at least tried and got the affirmation while I'm alive to see, like, people really are encouraging me to do this and really say, like, no, you actually have something going here for you. And I really want you to continue doing it. It's been, you know, actually, I felt more joyous than I've ever been in any of the work that I've ever done in my career.
That's amazing. And what I love most, because this is a central theme of the Care Deeply podcast, that we want people to learn how to take better care of themselves. Because once you take care of you, you can then take care of others, right?
Right.
So what's so important about your story is that once you took care of your own skincare, now you're able to help others who are suffering from the same thing. And Amen. That's joy flows from. That's where the joy flows from, that kind of self-care leading to kind of this community, this kind of care of others, because you've taken care of yourself, you've seen the results, and now you want to apply it to everyone else. So I love that. I love that. How do you see this skincare line? How do you naturally beat? How do you see it moving forward? You know, once this pandemic, we don't know what's going to happen, when it's going to, if there's an end per se, but what's the kind of the next step?
The next step for me is to take things one day at a time. One of the lessons that I also learned about myself in quarantine is that when I get excited about something, I want to reach the finish line immediately. So I need to have 1,000 followers right now on my Instagram page. I need to have this many dollars in sales. It's like, no, pump the brakes. So for me, I'm really just having fun. Like, there's no pressure for me to have this be my full-time job right away. There's no pressure for me to have sales skyrocket. Although, of course, if anyone's listening, please do visit Naturally Beat or Instagram and check out the product and try it for yourself as well. But I literally am just being free. It's like there's no pressure for something to happen right now, right? So my goal is each and every day to do things like this, just talk about, you know, my journey to creating different things, you know, not just the skincare line, and share my story with someone and hope it resonates with them, right? And hoping that I'm actually encouraging other people to do the same as well, right? This is not a competition. This is not, you know, I'm the only one that should be doing this, or I'm the only skincare line that you should ever buy from ever. This is no, like, this is why I did it. I hope that you would, you know, join me in this journey, either by supporting me financially or by getting the word out from me, right? And then take it day by day. And I know that God has control of this. You know, one thing that I put into prayer when I started all of this is, and this actually goes to Ecclesiastes 22 that I was talking about, is that I don't want to go before, you know, my time, God. Like, just take me day by day, exactly what I'm supposed to do with this. And, you know, that's how we got connected. It was time for us to talk at this moment, because God said, okay, now it's time, even though I've been percolating with this idea. Literally, God, just tell me each day, what do you want me to do with it? And I will honor that. And Ecclesiastes 22:26 talks about the fact that, you know, the author goes back and forth about what is vanity in terms of work, right? He said, you know, I gained all this wisdom. I planted all these vineyards. I did this, that, and the third. And I thought that would make me happy, and it didn't. And he was like, well, does that mean that all work is vain? And his conclusion that he came to was that, no, you're supposed to find joy and fulfillment in work. But the caveat is that God has to be behind it, right? So you can't just venture off. And I think that's the one major lesson that I want people to take away from this. I didn't start this without putting it into prayer. So it might seem like out of left field for some people, but I've actually been percolating on this for a while. Actually, technically speaking, I've been percolating on it since I was in Kenya, because I've actually bought the URL while I was still in Kenya. But I didn't know what I was going to do with it. The name Naturally Beat literally just came in my mind. And I was like, I don't know what this is. It sounds pretty cool. I'm just going to buy the URL. And then when it's time to do something with it, it's time. And here I am today. So one advice I would always give people is, like, put things into prayer before you do it, because the only way you're going to get fulfillment out of any work that you do, whether it be, you know, charitable work, whether it be working in entrepreneurial type of field or whatever it is, that you know that you're only going to get fulfillment out of it if God is behind it. And so that was, you know, the big reflection point for me in thinking about what's the next steps with this product. But of course, people go to Naturally Beat on Instagram, follow. And I hope that is something that, you know, actually brings you joy in this time where there's a lot going on. And we do need to remember to take care of ourselves. And, you know, as much as, like, I'm happy that I see, you know, a lot of my friends on the front lines, you know, talking about the things that need to be changed in this world and in this country, don't forget that you have to take time for yourself as well.
Yes, do not forget to take time for yourself. And can you tell us, how do we stay connected with you? How do we find Naturally Beat? How do we find Karfi? How do we find Shone?
Yeah. Okay, so Naturally Beat, again, at Naturally Beat. So it's naturally spelled regularly, and then it's B-E-E-T, like the fruit. So Naturally Beat on Instagram and Facebook. If you just search on those two platforms, you'll find it immediately. Karfi, I'm the only Karfi as well. So if you search the Karfi Foundation, it'll pop up right away on Google, and you can follow my work there. There's actually a really great video up on the work that I did out in Kenya. And then I actually have a personal blog. You know, again, like I said, I love to create. And one of the ways I create is writing. So I'm just writing about things that I've been reflecting on in terms of what's going on in Africa, how I feel as a Black woman, and also, you know, how I'm investing in myself. So if you just search my name, SeunShokunbi, my blog will also come up right away.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shone, for joining us today and telling us about Naturally Beat. I can't wait to try it. I know that I suffer from hyperpigmentation and, you know, some skin issues. So I'm excited to try it because just multiply kind of my self-care routine as well.
Please do.
We'll definitely do a review as well.
Nice.
For your product. So thank you so much for joining us, and stay well.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the Care Deeply podcast. Let's remember to care deeply for ourselves and others.